Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society, to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons.
Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Mitchell Kriegman, who is a television producer and director, and one of the most creative individuals who came to the Hamptons years and years ago and had a studio at LTV in Wainscott, where on the site of LTV. And we shared some memories there, which I'll get around to. He's won Emmys for children's programs for work he did with Nickelodeon and MTV and a whole bunch of other things. And first of all, tell me about your how you got involved with children's television.
Wow. You know, I like to say my karma is kids. Kids are my karma. And, you know, I was working at Saturday Night Live, and a lot of writers in New York worked at Saturday Night Live and Sesame Street, you know, or Broadway and Sesame Street. That's where the two businesses in New York at the time was comedy and kids. And I worked at both. And I did a lot of stuff in the comedy side. I went back and forth all the time. But then the kid shows, you know, were successes. And so it became much more of an attraction to keep working there. And I did, you know, Ren and Stimpy, Rugrats, Doug, Rocco's Modern Life, Clarissa Explains It All. You know, I just did a ton. And then at Disney, then I went to Disney and did Bear in the Big Blue House and Winnie the Pooh. So it was just a lot more to get done on the... And I think that kids are more creative. It's more creative for kids. It's gone. That business is gone, you know.
Tell me about that business in terms of exactly... These were animations, I think.
Well, some of them were. Clarissa was a sitcom. Bear was a giant puppet I did with Henson. Big, Big World was another one that I did on my own with a giant sloth. But the others were animation series, you know, and they were created by various people, and I developed them and worked with Nickelodeon and Disney on them. And that was the beginning, in a lot of ways, of the more... I was an artist in New York before. I was a performance artist, video artist, audio artist, and I had a show at the Whitney during the biennial. And so I had already had my art career. Then that was my kids and sitcom and animation career. And now I'm doing theatrical musicals in New York. So go figure. It just keeps going.
Tell me, were you a writer at Saturday Night Live?
I was a writer, performer, and filmmaker.
And what were some of the comics that were in vogue?
Yeah, I was at the end of the good old days and the beginning of the bad old days. And so I was at the end of Michael O'Donohue, who I worked with, and who I did Mr. Mike's Mondo video. I worked on his Mr. Mike's Mondo video. And Emily Prager, who's a Hampton regular out there. Arthur Prager, you probably knew her father. But I worked in the end of the era of Belushi, et cetera. And then when I started again, it was Eddie Murphy was really the only person that was of any merit in that new crowd.
I was a good friend with Michael O'Donohue.
You were?
I went to the University of Rochester as an undergraduate, and he and I had a radio show together, which was quite quite exciting, and I stayed his friend for the rest of his life, including where I used to go visit him. He was down in what's now Soho. At that time was just a factory area with all these filing cabinets and everything.
Right. So you know Michael O'Donohue. My career, in a different way than Michael, is patterned after Michael. He is anybody I would say that kind of discovered and understood what I did. It was Michael. And you must have seen Mr. Mike's Mondo video. You must have, you know, and you knew Michael used to say, you know, if you hire me, you've got a problem. You know, you've got a problem. And he was just fucking brilliant working with Michael.
I enjoyed my time with him. And
that radio show, you should pull it out again. I bet it's got some gems in it.
So are you born and raised in Manhattan?
No. I was born and raised in Richmond, Virginia, the South. Capital of the Confederacy.
How did you wind up in New York?
I escaped. I escaped from the South and Robert E. Lee and all those guys and the separate bathrooms and all of it. And I went to Boston and basically just did LSD until I could think again. And then gradually I lived in Italy for a year. And then when I came back, I was supposed to go to San Francisco, but I landed in New York and I became a performance artist. So I didn't go anywhere for a while.
What brought you to the Hamptons first time?
The first time was just being part of a crowd of people getting drunk and going to the beach and sharing houses and all that stuff in like quite some time ago, before it was invaded by another crowd. But, you know, I go to the beach. I mean, that's why I live in Portugal now, is I swim every day. So, you know, the Hamptons in those days weren't the Hamptons to me. They were just, you know, places where a whole bunch of my friends were, you know, on weekends.
Well, we should talk a little bit about the Rat.
Okay, this is because you remembered the Rat, and I don't think, thankfully, nobody but you remembers the Rat. But if we're going to stir that memory, I'll be glad to give the real truth to it.
Because it's like 18 feet high and it's inflated, and it was
very inflated. Yeah,
and it hissed, and it was located on an industrial road right in front of LTV. And I think it was there. My remembrance of it was that it had something to do with attempts being made to use local people for some of the work being done in TV and the movie studio there, which the New York City people objected to and considered to be something that needed to be stamped out, which in the end it did. By building this Rat, which I'd seen before in New York City. I think it travels.
Oh yeah, it's a union tool of protest. But no, it did not succeed, number one, at all. I mean, it succeeded in discouraging maybe other people from doing it, but it didn't stop my show at all. It wasn't, in theory, it wasn't really a New York thing. It was a Writers Guild trap. I got stuck in a Writers Guild trap. I'm a member of the Writers Guild. I hire lots and lots of writers on all those shows I mentioned. I hire them all the time. And they were all very successful. And then I did this show trying to reinvent the wheel in Wainscot and using this new technology. And it was wonderful. And we had 40 episodes and from PBS. And we were trying to negotiate the regular old contract that Sesame Street has. And they were planning to strike the whole business. This is right when whatever that strike is. We just had one big strike a couple of years ago. That whenever this year, I can't even remember. I can't count that far back. But there was a strike brewing. So they thought they would strike me as an example, even though I'm in the guild and all the writers I was hiring were in the guild. So they thought I was a canary in the gold mine. And they wanted to, I don't know what they wanted to do. In the end, it was a farce They failed. I did the show anyway, and I hired the writers, and I paid them Writers Guild. And it was just a trumped up kind of, and I emphasize the word trumped up, kind of nightmare that they put everybody in the Hamptons through and put me through and the writers in the end. And everyone that worked on my show got brought into the guild. It was just a toothless farce is what it was.
Well, tell me more about how long were you there? It was like 20 years?
In Waynescott? I think I was only there, let's see. I raised my kids out there. I was in Watermill. I mean, yeah, I was in it a lot longer than when I lived full-time doing TV out there. But 2012 I left. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't remember when I first got, as soon as I got to New York, I was out east, you know, all the time. So I always spent an outlandish amount of time out east.
Where did you go to do your work after 2012?
2012, I went to Santa Barbara.
Whoa, and 4 miles, a whole four
yeah,
miles.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to Santa Barbara and I did a lot of great stuff there. I was a journalist for a while until that annoyed everybody. I always try to like have a mic drop before I leave. So
tell me about your career since. What have you been doing?
Well, recently I moved to Portugal. Basically, I was in the States until about 4 or 5 years ago. And I did some reboots and pilots of the stuff that I had created earlier. But more importantly, I moved here and I'm shooting a documentary in the Amazon, or we say Amazonia because we don't want to be confused with the company Amazon, which is what people think of first. But we're shooting a documentary about a woman who gave up the concert halls to play, take her piano on a big boat and take it up the Amazon and play for all the indigenous people. It's a beautiful film. You can see some of it on YouTube, but we're doing a new version.
What's the name of it?
It's called A Piano on the Amazon.
I guess so.
It's very Fitzcarraldo. It's a lot of fun. Then I have a theatrical musical I'm doing in the city called Stuck in the 90s uses all the music, all the great music of the 90s. And my co-writer was my head writer on Clarissa. And then I have three TV series here in Portugal I'm doing with Portuguese writers. And so it's quite a bit of fun. And then I've written a new graphic novel called Blame in this new technique. So that's going to come out soon. So, you know.
What do you mean new technique that you...
It's a little bit like Webtoons, but a lot of people older don't know it, but Webtoons is a kind of, here's a famous quote by the guy that started all the special effects out in the world. People read from left to right and right to left, but everybody scrolls and it's a scrolling comic book. So you read it on your phone.
Oh, I see.
Like web comics.
So it's got art and drawings.
Yes, it's a comic book. Yes, it has. It's called Blame. It's about a girl who sees bad things before they happen.
Her name is Blaine?
Blame, B-L-A-M-E, like blame, to blame. Like her father named her Blame because he said she ruined his marriage.
Tell me about your family when you were growing up for a minute or two. What did your dad do and your mom?
You know this answer, right?
No, I don't.
You don't really? Seriously? Okay. I grew up in a psychiatric clinic. And if you have another 3-hour program, I could probably talk to you about it. I literally grew up, my home was the clinic. My room was it was designed for a patient.
What?
There was plastic partition between me and my brother. The house had patients coming and going all the time. And they were, they were psychoanalysts. The Kriegman Clinic, which thankfully doesn't exist anymore. It was a pretty big nightmare.
How old were you when you left home?
Well, I wish I had left home at 5, but I got home. I got out at 18.
And where'd you go? Where'd you go?
I went to Boston.
Big difference.
Yeah, or wherever. It was probably Junkie Row. I don't know. It was anywhere I'd get a place. I went to Boston University for a year. And then I went to Bennington, which was much more frou-frou.
Yes.
And it was an all-girls school at the time. So I was in the first group of men. And you can imagine how difficult that made it for everybody. And yeah, I went to from Richmond to Boston to Vermont. Sounds like a James Taylor song.
Were you writing stuff along the way, books or?
Well, yes, I was writing stuff, and I had some of the most famous writers at the time as teachers at Bennington, and they all told me, without exception, that I would never be a writer. Wow. And it was Bernard Malamud, no less, who you remember. Nobody remembers him anymore, but Bernard Malamud said to me, "My child in nursery school writes better than you do." And they refused to let me write a creative thesis. And then 3 years later, I had a story in the New Yorker. And they asked me, "Who do you have to thank for this story? You know, getting to you to the point where you write the story." And I said, "I have nobody to thank, but I have a lot of people to blame." And I ticked off all the people to blame.
Including
you can see I've had a very smooth, kind of gracious life and route through life. You know, everything just goes like butter with me. No antagonisms whatsoever. That's why Michael is so wonderful, because Michael, you know, lives for antagonism. He was the antidote.
Yes, he was. And we were. I met him because I was editing a humor magazine and he wanted to join the staff. He was a year younger than me. And then we became very close friends and did all sorts of things that got us in trouble at the college.
Yeah, and that's what he was for. And what was the name of the magazine?
Ugh.
Ugh, great name. Perfect.
A chapter in his biography, it was written about him. His college years were with me. He left without graduating, as I recall.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Tell me about Portugal. Are you there with your family? Are you all by yourself?
My kids are all grown up. I raised them. And there's one that's making video games in LA, another that's a barista in Santa Barbara. And my daughter is a very amazing painter. And so they're in their late 20s, all having a good time, I hope. And I don't know about today. Maybe today they're not, but most days.
They come visit them?
They come visit me. Wouldn't you rather visit Portugal than have somebody visit you, your dad visit you?
In the Algarve?
We're not the Algarve. I'm in Cascais. Cascais is the plush kind of Montecito of... the Montecito underbelly of Portugal.
Well, there's a lot of stories connected. But drew you to the Hamptons? You were there for a long time.
Yeah, I love the Hamptons. No, I was dug in on the Hamptons, yeah. But, you know, nothing lasts forever.
Yes. I think we're done. Thank you.
Okay. Nothing lasts forever is the last memorable words of Mitchell Kriegman.
What are you working on right now? Oh, you've already told me what you're working on right now.
Yeah, musicals and graphic novels and having a good time and swimming in the ocean and drinking in Lisbon at night. Those are my chief occupations. I contest that there is a tequila zone that starts in Santa Barbara and it goes across Mexico, and it's a place where you can swim in the ocean, bike anywhere, sit in cafes and write, and drink tequila all night.
And that's
where I live.
Well, thanks again, and we'll talk again.